runs across my lips, painting them a color of rose that accents their fullness. I wonder if any of his clients are Dagger patrons, nobility enticed by the riches Enzo can reward them with once he's on the throne. Maybe all of them are. Or maybe they have no idea who the Dagger's leader is, only that they are supporting an expert assassin who will dethrone the king. How did you learn so much about energy? I decide to ask as he works. Raffaele shrugs once. Trial and error, he replies. We are the first. There is no one before us to learn from. With each new elite we recruit, I learn, experiment, and record. Someone needs to leave the knowledge behind for the generation after us. If there is another generation. I listen in quiet fascination. He's a messenger in more ways than one. Do you know where it came from? I know it began with the blood fever, but... He reaches for a slender brush. It did not begin with the blood fever. It began with energy. The link between the gods and the mortal world they created. Energy. Yes, it forms the land, air, sea, and all the living things. It is what breathes life into us. And what gives us powers? Raffaele nods. He dips the brush in a shallow dish of sparkling powder, then touches it to the edge of my good eye. I frown as he works, trying to imagine this strange, invisible energy. His brush pauses for a moment. When you close your eye, you see sparks of colors, do you not? He says. I close my eye to test his theory. Yes, in the blackness float sparks of faint blues and greens, reds and golds blinking in out of existence. Yes. You are actually seeing threads of energy. He touches my hand carefully and a chill of delight runs up my arm. The world is made of countless millions of threads that connect all things. These threads give the world both its color and its life. He nods at the bedchamber around us. Right now, in some small way, you're connected to everything in here. The mirror, the walls, the air. Everything. Even the gods. His words stir my memory. I think back to the night of my father's death, when I suspended everything around me, the raindrops and the wind. The world had turned black and white, and translucent threads had glistened in the air. During my burning, I'd seen the color drain from my execution stand before it all came rushing back. Most people don't have enough energy to manipulate their connections to the world. We weren't meant to. But when the fevers affected you and me, something changed in us. Suddenly it linked us to the world in a way that our bodies were never meant to be linked. Raffaele turns my hand so that my palm faces upward, then runs his slender fingers along the inside of my wrist, all the way to my fingertips. My skin tingles at his touch. I suck in my breath, blushing. Every elite is different, and pulling on threads in specific ways will do specific things. The Windwalker, for example, can pull on the threads in the air that create wind. Enzo pulls on threads of heat energy from himself, from the sun, from fire, and from other living things. From the Sunlands come reports of an elite who can change metal into gold. Another rumored elite, Magiano, has escaped the Inquisition axis so often that the word magic evolved from his name. There are countless ways energy manifests in us. I can only imagine what undiscovered elites out there can do, those beyond the daggers and beyond who I know exist. There are even rumors of an elite who can bring people back from the dead. I wonder for a moment how many others exist outside of the Dagger Society. Are there rival societies? And you? I say. I can see and sense all the energy in the world, he replies. Every single thread that connects everything to everything else. I can't do much save to tug faintly on them, but I can feel them all. Here, he pauses to look me in the eye. I feel a sudden tug at my heart, as if the sight of him had set butterflies loose in my chest. My eye widens in understanding. This is why his touch along my wrist left me tingling. No wonder your clients fall so madly in love with you. if you look like this and can literally pull on their heartstrings. Raffaele laughs his beautiful laugh. Someday I'll teach you if you like. My heart thrills again at that, and I wonder if it has anything to do with Raffaele's energy this time. What about me? I ask after a pause. My power? Of all the daggers, you and I are the most alike. We sense the intangible. Raffaele turns his eyes to me, and the sun catches the brilliant, shifting colors in his irises. Think of the lesser gods. Firmidity, the angel of fear, or Kaldura, the angel of fury. Laetes, the angel of joy. Denarius, the angel of greed. Threads of energy connect not only physical things, but also emotions, thoughts, and feelings. Fear, hate, love, joy, sorrow. You have the ability to pull on threads of fear and hatred. A powerful talent if you can tame it. The more fear and hate your environment has, therefore the stronger you are. Fear creates the strongest delusions. Everyone has darkness inside them, however hidden. His eyes turn solemn and I shiver, wondering what small darkness might lie within his gentle soul. Was Enzo the first elite you ever met? I whisper. Yes. I'm suddenly curious. How did you meet him? Raffaele starts putting away the powders on the table. He bought my virgin price. I turn quickly in my chair to look at him. Your virgin price? You mean you and Enzo? It's not what you think. He gives me a playful smile. When I turned 17 and came of age, I became an official consort of the Fortunata court, so the court held a lavish bidding masquerade for my debut. I try to imagine the scene. Raffaele, at my age, young and innocent, more beautiful than anyone else in the world, standing before a sea of masked nobility and preparing to give himself away. The entire city must have turned out for you. Raffaele doesn't disagree, which is confirmation enough. Enzo came to my debut night in secret, searching for others like himself. He hesitates for a moment as if remembering. I sensed him the instant he arrived, even though he stayed hidden and out of sight. Never in my life had I met another with the type of energy I had. It was the first time I could see the threads of his energy around him like a halo, weaving together and apart. He must have noticed my strange interest in him. His manservant bid on me for him and won. How much? I asked curiously. An obscene amount. He lowers his eyes. I was frightened, you know. I'd heard stories from the older consorts about their debut nights. But when he came to my chamber, all he wanted to do was talk. So we did. He demonstrated to me his abilities with fire. I confessed my ability to sense others. We both knew we risked our lives talking openly about our powers. I suddenly realize that there is only one person Raffaele never uses his talents on. Enzo. Why do you trust him? My question sounds suspicious and scathing, and immediately I wish I could take it back. But Raffaele, ever graceful, simply meets my gaze with a level look. If Enzo becomes king, he says, I can step away from this life. I dwell on the moment of sadness I'd seen from him before. Then on the endless parade of aristocrats he has paid to entertain, both inside and outside the bedchamber. The lack of freedom. No one chooses the life of a consort, no matter how lavish. I'm sorry, I finally say. Raffaele pauses to look over the broken side of my face. I tense. A touch of sympathy enters his gaze and he touches my cheek with one hand. I feel a slight tug on my heart. My anxiety calms, my chest warms in trust. Everything about his touch soothes and caresses. There's something oddly comforting about this moment. We're not so different, the two of us. The maid returns with an armful of silks then, and our moment ends. Raffaele gives us privacy while she helps me change into the new garments. a beautiful gold dress cut in the Tamoran style. The loose silks feel delightfully cold against my skin. Clothing from the Sunlands has always felt more comfortable than the stiff corsets and lace that Kenetrans wear. Before the maid leaves, she places a velvet box on top of the dresser. Raffaele returns. He nods in approval at the dress. Amuteru, he says, lingering on the exotic accents of my family name. I can see the Tamoran blood in you. As I look on in wonder, Raffaele brushes my hair until it spills down my back like a silver curtain. He twists the strands into a smooth, glossy bun behind my head in traditional Tamoran fashion, picks up two long cloths of white and gold, and carefully wraps my head with them until all of my hair is hidden underneath an elaborate, intertwined series of gold and white silk, the cloth draping down behind me in a sheet of sun and snow. He pins jewels on the cloth. He ties the Tamoran head wrap so much more skillfully than I ever have. Finally, he places a thin silver chain on my head from which a single teardrop diamond suspends at my forehead. There, he says, you will hide your markings like this from now on. I stare at myself, stunned. My cheekbones and nose, the elegant sweep of my eye, all enhanced. I've never looked more Tamoran in my life. It's a convincing disguise. Raffaele smiles at my expression. I have a present for you, he says. He turns and opens the velvet box on the dresser. My heart skips a beat. It's a white half-mask, made of porcelain and cold to the touch. Diamonds trace along its edges and twinkle in the light, and trails of bright glitter paint elaborate patterns across the mask's pale surface. Tiny white plumes arch at the point where it curves up toward the temple. I can only stare. Never in my life have I worn something so finely crafted. I commissioned this for you, Raffaele says. Care to try it? I nod wordlessly. Raffaele positions the half mask over my face. It fits snugly like a long-lost possession, something that has always been a part of my body. Now, snow-white porcelain and lines of shining light conceal the spot where my eye used to be. The mask covers it all. Without the distraction of my marking, the natural beauty of my face shines through. Mia delinetta, Raffaele breathes. He leans down close enough for his breath to warm the skin of my neck. You are truly kissed by moon and water. As I stare silently back, I feel something powerful stir inside me, a buried fire, subdued during childhood and long forgotten. I have lived all my life in the shadow of my father and sister. Now that I'm standing in the sun for the first time, I dare to think differently. The broken butterfly has been made whole. Faint voices come from the hallway outside. Before either of us can react, the door opens and Enzo strides in. I can't keep my cheeks from turning bright red, and I turn my face partly away, hoping he doesn't notice. His eyes settle first on Raffaele. Is she ready? Then he notices me. Whatever words he meant to speak now halt on his tongue. For the first time since I met him, a strange emotion flickers across his face that hints at something underneath. Raffaele studies him. At a loss for words, Your Highness. I'll take that as a compliment. Enzo recovers in an instant. He exchanges a quiet look with Raffaele. I look between them, uncertain what conversation has just passed. Finally, he turns away from us, and it seems as if he purposely avoids meeting my stare. She starts tomorrow, he says before he leaves.
Terran Centauro. As the sun sets over Estendia, Terran locks himself inside his chambers. His jaw is tight with frustration. Several weeks have already passed since Adelina's escape from her execution. He's not found a single trace of her. Rumor has it that she came here to Estendia. At least, that was all his Inquisition patrols could gather. But Estendia is a large city. He needs more information than that. Terran undoes the gold buttons of his Inquisition uniform, strips off his robe and removes the armor underneath. He pulls his thin linen undershirt up over his head, baring his torso to the air. The orange glow of sunset from his window highlights his shoulders, the hard, muscled contour of his back. It also illuminates the maze of crisscrossing scars that cover his body. Terran sighs, closes his eyes, and rolls his neck. His thoughts wander to the Queen. The King had been dead drunk at his council meeting today, laughing off fears of his hungry people's rising anger at his taxes, impatient to return to his afternoon hunting trips and brothels. Throughout the whole meeting, Queen Julietta looked on in silence. Her eyes were cool, calm, and dark. If her husband irritated her, she didn't show it. She certainly didn't show any signs that she had invited Terran to her bedchambers the night before. Terran closes his eyes at the memory of her in his arms and shivers in longing. He looks down at the whip lying by his bed. He walks over to it. He had to have the weapon specially made. It consists of 9 different tails, each tail equipped at the end with long blades, rare foreign platinum for weight, tipped with steel, honed so finely that their edges could slice open skin with the faintest whisper of a touch. On any normal man, a weapon like this would shred his back into ribbons of meat with a single strike. Even on someone like Terran, with skin and flesh hardened by demonic magic, the metal whip wreaks havoc. He kneels on the floor, lifts the whip, holds his breath, then he snaps the whip over his head. The blades rake deep into the flesh of his back, ripping jagged lines across his skin. He lets out a strangled gasp as pain floods him, robbing him of his breath. Almost immediately, the cuts start to heal. "I am a deformed creature," he mouths silently, repeating the words he once said as a 12-year-old boy, an inquisitor in training, kneeling before the 16-year-old Princess Julietta. He remembers that day so well. She was newly married to the powerful Duke of Estancia. Young Enzo, still crown prince to the throne, lay in the infirmary, the lucky survivor of drinking poisoned soup, and the old king was already dying. Julietta bent down, studied Terran thoughtfully, and placed her finger under his chin. She gently tilted his head up until his pale, colorless eyes met her dark, cool ones. "Why are you afraid to look at me?" she asked. "You are chosen by the gods, Your Highness," he said ashamed. "And I am a malfetto lower than a dog. I am unworthy of your presence." He hoped she couldn't guess his dark secret, that strange demonic powers had appeared in him recently. Julietta smiled. "If I forgive you for being a malfetto, little boy, would you pledge your undying devotion to me? Would you do anything for me?" Terran looked up into her eyes with desperation and desire. She was so pretty. Delicate, heart-shaped face framed with dark curls. Royal blood. Not a hint of a marking on her. Perfection. "I would pledge anything to you, Your Highness. My life. My sword. I am yours." "Good." She tilted her head toward him. "Tell me, who do you think should rule this country next?" Terran leaned into her touch. The question confused him. "The Crown Prince," he said. "It is his birthright." Her eyes hardened. "Wrong answer." "You said you were a malfetto lower than a dog. Do you really want a malfetto as your king?" Terran hadn't thought about it like that. He used to wrestle and spar with Enzo in the palace gardens, when Terran's father was busy leading the Inquisition Axis. They were friends, even, or at least friendly. Always paired up in afternoon sword practice. Terran hesitated, torn between the idea of Enzo as pure-blooded royalty and the reality of him being tainted by the blood fever's markings. Finally, he shook his head. "No, Your Highness. I wouldn't want that." Julietta's eyes softened, and she smiled again. "Right answer. I am the firstborn. It is my birthright to rule." For a fleeting moment, Taryn wondered if she was the one who slipped poison into Enzo's soup. She leaned closer. Then she said the words that would ensnare him forever. "Do as I say, little Taryn. Help me rid this world of all malfettos. And I will make sure the gods forgive you for your abomination." The memory fades. Taryn raises the whip again and again. "To atone for my cursed magic, I devote myself to the Inquisition all the days of my life. I will serve the Queen, rightful ruler of Kenetra. Not only will I rid this world of young elites, but I shall rid this world of malfettos." Blood runs down the pulped flesh of his back, as his body tries desperately to keep up in healing itself. He sways in place, dizzy from the agony. Tears drip from his unnaturally pale eyes. His marking. But Taryn only grits his teeth and smiles. His thoughts return to Adelina. She couldn't have just disappeared into thin air. She was here, somewhere. He would simply have to search harder. Pay off every street urchin and beggar in the city. For the price of a cheap meal, they'll tell you anything. His eyes pulse in anticipation. Yes, thousands of spies. I have plans for you, Adelina. If Taryn could have his own way, he would kill every elite he could find. Then he would throw every malfetto in the city, in the country, into the dungeons. He would burn every single one of them at the stake. Abominations. If only he could make them understand. "I will find you all. I will use everything in my power to save your souls. I was born to destroy you."
In the good years, they wine and dine, laugh and love. In the bad years, they draw their swords and slit each other's throat. Excerpt from Relations Between Kenetra and Beldane, The Travels of Eleida Eleanor. Adelina Amuteru. My life at the Fortunata court quickly falls into place. For 2 solid weeks, Raffaele teaches me the subtle graces of moving around the court. The art of walking, of smiling, of avoiding unwanted client advances as an underage consort in training. Simple in theory, but Raffaele's effortless elegance is made up of 1,000 tiny gestures that are shockingly difficult to imitate. "You are comparing 2 weeks of training with 10 years, Raffaele tells me, laughing, when I complain about how clumsy my walk looks next to his own. "Do not worry so much. You know enough for a novice, and that will get you by." And so it does. I become used to wrapping my hair in silks every morning, putting on my glittering mask and wandering the halls of the court. Few pay attention to me, as long as I follow Raffaele's advice. "You are underage, you have no name as far as the court is concerned, and you are not permitted to speak to anyone who wants to be your client. This should give you protection if you ever feel you need to shake off unwanted advances." The freedom is nice. I spend my mornings down in the cavern, observing the other elites whenever they gather. Gradually, I learn more about each of them. After Enzo and Raffaele, for instance, the Star Thief was their next recruit. Enzo named her after the scribe Tristan Chursley's Stories of the Star Thief, a folk hero who could steal anything because she could steal the minds of beasts. Her marking is a purple shape that stretches across part of her face. After her came the spider, who used to be a blacksmith apprentice. The dark irregular markings on his neck extend down to his chest. The Windwalker was exiled here from the snowy Skyland nation of Beldane. I don't know the story behind that. One of her arms is covered in dark swirling lines. The last one, the Architect, is a boy currently apprenticed at the University of Estensia to a master painter. Capable of touching anything, a rock, a sword, a human, and unwinding it, then reforming it in a different spot. Enzo gave him his elite name after he designed the gem-locked door to the cavern. His fingernails have stripes of discoloration on them, lines of deep black and blue. Altogether, there are 6 of them. I hope I survive to be the 7th. I take lunches in my chambers alone and wander the halls and courtyards when I feel restless. The others don't talk much to me yet. I rarely see Enzo. Even a banished prince must still have princely duties, I suppose, but whenever I don't see his face down in the cavern, I leave disappointed. Some days I feel like the only one in the court's secret corridors. I come to look forward to the performances that happen almost every night. Elaborate dances put on by the consorts that draw potential clients from every corner of the city. Almost all of the other consorts are marked. They wear decorative masks like me, many with their hair also woven into elaborate headpieces, works of art. My only goal now is to master my power, to be included in the dagger's missions, their secretive comings and goings. I start to forget that the Inquisition is hunting for me. I start to forget that I ever had a sister. I only think of these things late at night, when everything is quiet. Perhaps she's moved on without me anyway.
Terran Santoro. Master Santoro. Yes, what is it? This is a street urchin who begs near the edge of the Red Quarter. He says he saw something at the Fortunata Court that might interest you. Oh, is that so? Speak up, boy. You'll have a hot supper and a place to sleep if I like your answer. Yes, sir. It was yesterday. I heard from other urchins that the Inquisition's searching for a girl with a scar across her left eye. We are. And? Well, I can't be sure, but I saw... You're either sure or you're not. What did you see? I'm sorry, Master Santoro. I'm sure. Sure I saw such a girl walking along the upper courtyards of the Fortunata Court. The fancy one, up on the hill. Yes, I know the one. Get on with it. Yes. Sorry, sir. The girl's hair was wrapped up in cloth, though, so I don't know what color it was. Wrapped? In a Tumoran fashion? I don't know. I suppose so.
Terran sits back in his chair. He studies the filthy, shivering boy kneeling before him for a long moment. Finally, he smiles. Thank you. He waves a hand at the inquisitors who'd brought the boy in. A gold talent, a hot meal, and a room at an inn. He nods once as the boy's face lights up. Never let it be said that I'm not generous.
Once upon a winter, I met a man in the woods. The man beckoned me over to see a satchel of goods. He offered 3 wishes. I asked for beauty, love, riches. And he froze me in stone where I stood. The Greedy Ghost of Cypress Pass, Common Folk Song. Adelina Amuteru. Another night at the Fortunata Court. Another night of glistening robes and sensual dances. Raffaele helps me prepare until I am breathtaking in silks and jewels, and then leads me out of the secret halls and toward the main lounging chamber. The chamber is lavishly decorated tonight, dotted with velvet divans, plates of jasmine sitting on low round tables, arching curtains of silks hanging across tall windows. Vases of night lilies stand in each corner of the room, their dark purple petals open, their rich musky scent filling the air. Consorts dressed in their finest gathering clusters, some already have clients with them, while others giggle among themselves. In the center of the chamber is a low, raised, circular platform, ringed with thick scarlet cushions for guests to sit on. They are already half filled with people. I'll leave you here, Raffaele says as we stop behind the silk veil leading into the main chamber. You know the routine. Are you performing tonight? I ask. Raffaele gives me a small smile. Then he kisses me on both cheeks. Look for me. Then he leaves without another word. The instant I step past the veil and into the chamber, I make my way toward where other consorts in training are already lounging on the cushions near the back. As I go, several clients catch sight of me, their eyes lingering before they glide onto available consorts. One man in particular clad from head to toe in dark, glittering velvet, his face hidden entirely behind a black mask, watches me for a long moment, only half interested in his conversation with his companions. I keep my gaze determinedly forward. It always takes me a moment before I let down my guard at these events. The other consorts in training exchange eye contact with me, but none of us speak. I choose a cushion at one end, then look on as more masked clients and consorts swirl in the room until it fills to capacity. Finally, servants extinguish several of the lanterns lining the walls. The room dims and the conversation hushes. Other servants light the lanterns that circle the raised platform. I straighten, wondering what Raffaele will look like. After a few minutes, the court's madam sweeps through the crowd and stops before the platform's edge. She is tall and regal, still beautiful in her golden years with lines of gray in her hair. She spreads her arms wide. I'll have to ask Raffaele next time if she's a patron to the daggers. She must be. "Welcome to the Fortunata Court, my guests," she says. Her voice is rich and warm, and everyone in the audience leans forward, drawn in. "It's a cool, calm night, a lovely time for us to gather, and I know why you all have come." She pauses to smile. "You want to see our court's shining jewel perform." A round of low applause answers her. "I won't delay it any longer, then," she continues. "Abandon yourselves to an evening of desire, my guests, and dream of us tonight." With that, the rest of the wall's lanterns go out, leaving only the platform illuminated. Deep drumbeats echo one after another. They send a tremor through me, stirring my alignment to passion, and I feel my energy churn. A young consort glides through the darkness of the crowd. When he reaches the platform and steps into the light of the lanterns, I stifle a gasp. Raffaele is dressed in pale silks that make him stand out. His chest is bared, and a glittering gold line is painted down the middle of his torso. He stops in the center of the raised platform, eyes lowered, and then kneels in a fluid gesture, his arms folded before him, wide sleeves trailing. His robes pool in a circle around him. He stays there for a moment as the drumbeats thicken, and then he rises back to his feet and walks in a slow, hypnotic circle. I have never seen a composed, delicate dance like this, paired with a song that is nothing but drums. I may never see such a thing again. I glance at the clients filling the room. They are stunned into silence. Gradually, as the tempo increases, two other consorts join Raffaele on the platform, a girl and a boy, and together they glide in circles around one another, eyes both shy and piercing, movements flowing like water. The other two consorts are beautiful, but they pale next to Raffaele. There is no question whom the audience's eyes follow. I watch mesmerized. Then Raffaele's moment of deep sadness comes back to me, and the performance chills me to the bone. Someone new sits behind me. I don't think much of it at first. The room is crowded with patrons at any rate, all focused on the platform. It's just when the person speaks that my heart stops. "I won't hurt you, Adelina. Just listen." The voice is very close to my ear, close enough that I can feel the speaker's breath soft on my skin. He's so quiet I barely hear him over the drums. But I do. I've heard this voice only once in my entire life, but I would recognize it anywhere. Taryn. The energy in my heart spikes, and I have a sudden urge to scream in the middle of the performance. He found me! From the corner of my eye, I can see that he's not dressed in his Inquisitor armor and robes, but in black velvet, his face hidden behind a mask, just like everyone else here. He's the man I saw earlier, the one whose gaze lingered on me. How did he find me? I've been too careless. Did he spot me wandering around the court? Did he recognize me from the balconies? Is he alone? Are there other inquisitors in the crowd? My heart beats frantically. Are they waiting to strike? "You have no reason to trust me, I know," he murmurs as the performance continues. But I did not track you down to arrest you. I've come to make a deal with you. This can work out strongly in your favor, if you want it. I stay quiet. My hands are trembling violently in my lap, and I clutch them together harder so that no one will notice. My gaze stays fixed straight ahead at Raffaele's performance. Does anyone else notice him? Does Raffaele? Someone help me, I think, my eye darting around the room. If I make a commotion now, Terran will be revealed. But what will stop him from dragging me back to the Inquisition Tower or killing me on the spot? The other daggers aren't here to protect me, and Raffaele can't. I'm on my own. Tell me, Terran whispers, have the young elites taken you under their wing? Drumbeats pound in my ears. I stay frozen, unable to answer his question. Seeing as how you're alive and well, I'll assume yes. I don't even have to see Terran's face to know that he's smiling. Are you so sure about their intentions? Do you trust your rescuers so easily? If I weren't terrified, I would laugh at his words, as if I had a reason to think the Inquisitors would be any more trustworthy. Speak, Adelina, Terran warns me. I would hate to make a scene and arrest you. My voice startles to life. I turn my head slightly, then whisper back in a tiny, choked voice drowned out by the drums. What do you want? I stammer. The beat of the drums changes. Terran whispers to me through their thundering rhythm. I know you are new to them. You probably don't know everything about their inner workings, but I suspect you will, and soon. He shifts closer as the drums grow steadily more frantic. So here's how we can help each other out. Why would I want to help you? I suck in my breath in a vain attempt to calm myself, and in the dark corners of the room, I can see memories of my burning day. The way Terran's pale eyes had pulsed at me. Observe everything, he whispers in my ear. Look, listen, and remember. I know where you are now. I will check in on you from time to time, and I expect you to share what you learn with me. My heart keeps time with the frenzied drumbeats. I can't breathe. If you do, not only will I spare your life, but I will shower you with riches. I can grant you your every desire. He smiles. Just think of it. You can redeem yourself. Change from an abomination in the gods' eyes to a savior. He pauses and his voice deepens. On the platform stage, Raffaele pulls the young female consort to him. The two twirl. He spins away from her and does the same with the male consort. If you don't, not only will I destroy you, but I will destroy everything you care about. Tides of fear and anger rise in my chest, fusing into one, filling my mind with whispers. What do you know of what I care about? I murmur harshly. Have you already forgotten your little sister? What a cold heart. Violetta. An icy claw grips my heart. Suddenly I'm back in my nightmare, putting my arm around my frail sister as a thunderstorm rages outside, then turning her around to find that she's not there at all. No, he's just trying to bait you. What could you possibly know about my sister? I snap. Plenty enough. On the morning of your burning, she came to me to beg for your life. Did you know that? Now it's your turn to return the favor. He's lying. You don't have her, I mutter. Terran's reply is one full of amusement. Do you really want to play that game with me? My resolve quivers. She'd gone to him? What if Terran is telling the truth? What if she did and he kept her? Whispers swirl in my mind, their words incomprehensible, filling me with a buzz of terror. And I thought she had moved on, perhaps promised to marry some wealthy man. What if she'd instead been with the Inquisition for weeks? Why would you do that for me, Violetta? I don't believe you, I whisper. Terran doesn't answer, and for a long moment, we just listen to the drums. Just when I think he might have left altogether, he replies, I have your sister, whether you want to believe it or not. and I will happily torture her until you can hear her screams from the Fortunata Court's beautiful balconies. He's lying. He's lying. He must be. I imagine Violetta's terrified face, tears streaking her cheeks. I imagine blood. Give me time, I finally whisper. I don't know what else to say. Of course, Taryn answers soothingly. We are on the same side. You'll soon realize you're fighting for the right cause. His tone turns strangely reverential, serious and grave. You can help me fix this world, Adelina. I'm caught in the middle of a tightening web. Next week, he whispers, I want to see you at the Inquisition Tower. Bring me some information that I'll find useful. How do I know you won't simply seize me once I arrive? Stupid girl, Taryn snaps. If I wanted you arrested, I'd do it right now. Why would I seize you when you can be my little helper? He draws very close, his breath hot against my ear. If I like what you tell me when you arrive at the tower, your sister gets to be pampered and fed until the next time I see you. If you don't come to me... He pauses. I can see his subtle shrug out of the corner of my vision. Then I don't keep up my end of the bargain. Then he will kill her. I have no choice. I simply nod. No answer. The brush of his breath against my ear vanishes and cold air prickles my skin. The drumbeats finally come to a stop. Up on the platform, Raffaele and the other two consorts bow to the crowd. The roomful of clients leap to their feet, roaring their enthusiasm, their applause thunderous. In the midst of the chaos, I look around me in a frantic attempt to find Taryn's face, but he's already disappeared into the sea of masked faces, as if he were never there. Only his words remain echoing in my mind, haunting me. I have been turned into a spy against my will. Let it be known so the gods help me. I am not a traitor, I am not a spy. Inscription etched in stone on the wall of an Estensian prison cell by an unnamed prisoner. Adelina Amuteru. I retreat to my bedchamber that night without saying a word to anyone. Raffaele frowns at me as I leave, his eyes following my figure from across the main court, but I force a quick smile at him and hurry away. It isn't until he catches up with me in the secret halls that I finally turn around to face him. Raffaele seems genuinely concerned for me, an emotion that tugs at my heart. He brushes my cheek with a brief touch of his fingers. His eyes are still bold with gold powder, his lashes long and black. You seemed frightened during the performance, he murmurs. Are you all right? I force back a smile and try to keep distance between us. The last thing I need is for him to sense how much I'm trembling. Yes, I was. I lie, hoping he can't tell. I felt too exposed in the audience tonight, perhaps just my nerves. I try to smile. I've never seen you perform. Raffaele watches me carefully. I try to comfort myself with the fact that he can only feel the shift of my energy, not read my actual thoughts. If he thinks I'm acting strange, let him think it's because of his performance or from being out in public. Or I could tell him what happened. I could let him know that Taryn has hunted me down, confess the task he gave me. After all, Enzo saved my life, didn't he? But Raffaele's warning during my gemstone test haunts me. What if the daggers kill me? They haven't known me long enough to trust me. What if this is enough to convince them that I'm far too risky to keep around? No, I can't tell them. I might be dead by tomorrow if I do. And Violetta will stay in the Inquisition's clutches. Finally, Raffaele decides to give in. He puts a hand on my shoulder. Rest well tonight, he says. He kisses my cheeks in reassurance, then turns to leave down the hall. I watch him go. Whether or not he actually believes me, I have no idea. That night, I stare sleeplessly at the ceiling. I try to picture my sister shivering in the same dark Inquisition cell I stayed in. Had she really begged for my life? Am I willing to risk myself to save her? How do I even know he has her? Do I dare doubt him? Next week. What am I going to do? How am I even going to sneak away? The following day, when Raffaele asks me how I'm feeling, I only say that I feel much better. He gives me a sidelong glance, but doesn't force me to say more. Another day passes. My initial panic settles into a steady undercurrent of unease. Maybe I had dreamed the whole thing, and Taryn never came in the first place. This thought is so tempting that I almost let myself believe it. By the third day, I'm able to think. In order to survive, I must play this game, and I must play it well. 5 days after the masquerade, Raffaele and I are back in the cavern. He observes me as I study Enzo sparring with the spider, trying to figure out how their energy works. Taryn's words linger in my mind, reminders of what he expects from me. My week is almost up. How will I ever be able to sneak off to the Inquisition Tower? I try to focus instead. Where did he learn to fight like that? I ask Raffaele as we watch Enzo circling the spider. He was supposed to be king. Raffaele reminds me as he jots down notes on a sheet of paper. He pauses to dip his quill in an inkwell on the floor. He trained with the Inquisitors as a child. Enzo waits for his opponent to strike first. For a long minute, nothing happens. The others call out jeers and encouragement from the edges of the circle. Then, suddenly, Spider lunges at Enzo, his wooden sword slashing forward toward the prince's left side. My weak side. The move is so fast that I see nothing more than a blur through the air, but somehow Enzo manages to predict the strike and darts out of the way at the last second. Fire sparks from his hands, engulfing him in a tight cylinder. Spider jumps back. Even with his speed, I can tell that the heat has singed the edges of his clothes. Enzo quells the flames at the same time as he dashes toward Spider, as if materializing from behind a veil of orange and gold. He strikes 3 times in rapid succession. Spider deflects the blows, one after another, then lunges back. The two of them rage on in a tense battle. The force of their hits echo in the cavern. Finally, Enzo catches the tiring Spider off guard. He kicks Spider's sword out of his grasp, grabs the wooden hilt, and points it back at his opponent's neck. The other daggers let out whoops, while Spider utters a growl of frustration. Duel's over. I let out a shaking breath as both of them lower their weapons and step away from each other. Enzo is dripping with sweat, his hair tousled and loose, his lean muscles straining. As far as I can tell, Spider is the only one who seems capable of working with the prince so thoroughly. Enzo's white linen shirt clings wet and translucent to his back. As he adjusts his gloves, he casts me a sideways glance and notices me watching. I try to avert my gaze. In my mind, I picture what Enzo might do to me if he finds out about my encounter with Taryn. He will engulf me in flames. Enzo gives me a polite nod without smiling, then approaches Spider to make sure he's unharmed. Star Thief, accompanied today by 2 coyotes instead of an eagle, claps. The one called Architect runs gangly hands through his hair as he marvels at Enzo's speed. Windwalker asks Enzo how he made his last move. Even Spider defers to him now as they exchange words I can't hear. I clear my throat and return my attention to Raffaele, who seems to be patiently finishing up his notes. "I hope you were concentrating during that duel," he says in a casual tone. I blush at his teasing. This is Raffaele's way of introducing me to the concept of energy, trying to teach me how to see threads of energy in the air. I shake Enzo out of my head, focus on my center, and search for my alignments to darkness and ambition, curiosity and fear. I imagine myself leaving my body, rushing through the air, searching deep inside the souls of the sparring daggers, practicing my analysis of their small, subtle movements, looking for glimpses of their energy in action, weaving my way through them to see the glittering threads of energy that make up their hearts and minds. My jaw tightens. Nothing. I sigh. I can't face Terran like this. Powerless. First you tell me that I need to master my abilities before I'm a dagger, I say, turning back to Raffaele. How am I supposed to learn anything if I stay separate from everyone else? Behind Raffaele's serene face, I notice a flash of something calculating. The ambition is restless in you today, but the surest way to slow your own progress is to rush yourself into situations you're not ready for. A firm note enters his voice. Patience. Careful, Adelina. You don't want Raffaele suspecting you. Why can I only call on my powers when threatened? I whisper instead. From the corner of my vision, I see Enzo leave the cavern. My shoulders hunch slightly in disappointment. Think of this scenario, Raffaele says. 100 years ago, when the Beldish tried to invade our northern isles, a doomed army of 40 Kinetran soldiers managed to fight off 400 Beldish men, buying us time to get our reinforcements there. Sometimes your body gives you strength that you ordinarily wouldn't have, right? I nod. The battle for Cardona Isle is a well-known piece of history. Your specific power works the same way. When you're pushed to extreme fear or anger, your body magnifies your energy tenfold, sometimes 100-fold. It isn't like this for everyone. Certainly not for me, nor for our star thief, whose alignment with joy means that her strength scatters when she's frightened or angry. But you? Raffaele leans back and regards me thoughtfully. Now we just need to figure out how you can use that strength without death clawing at your throat. Enzo would rather you not risk your life every time you call on your abilities. I lean back against the pillar. I almost want to laugh. If my life must be threatened in order to bring out my abilities, then I should be swimming in power by now. Raffaele watches me with a small smile on his lips that sends my heart racing. Today he's dressed in robes of pale gold, and his smooth face is unadorned except for some shimmering powder lining his eyes. How is it possible for such small things to accent his beauty so much? There's no one immune to his charms, I've noticed. He makes even sarcastic Windwalker blush with the tilt of his head, and when he teases Spider, the hulking boy coughs in embarrassment in spite of himself. Over the past few days, I've occasionally glimpsed Raffaele down at the court's entrance with clients. Yesterday, he was with a beautiful young lady. The day before, a handsome nobleman. It did not matter who the client was. I watched him ensnare them with nothing more than a smile and a sweep of his eyes. Every time the client's face looked stricken with desire. Every time I could believe wholeheartedly that he was in love with them. Raffaele picks up several smooth pebbles from the floor. He places them in a line before me. Let's start simple, he says. Use the darkness inside you before seeking it out in the world around you. He nods down at the pebbles. These stones are light gray. I want you to convince me that they are black. I turn my attention to them. Use the darkness inside you. I tell myself to focus on my fear and hatred, dragging my darker thoughts and memories to the surface. Then I reach for threads of energy inside me. I can feel them, but they stay just out of my grasp. Beside me, Raffaele takes some notes on his paper, recording my progress and shifts in energy, no doubt. I try for several minutes before I sigh and look up. Raffaele only nods at me. Cheer up, mi Adelineta, he says. You were able to conjure your energy during your first test. Take your time and keep trying. I concentrate on the rocks again. This time, I close my eye. In the darkness, I tune out the sounds of the others' training, revisiting instead the night of my father's death. My thoughts turn from my father to my sister. A memory emerges of our early days. the way she would tuck my hair behind my ears, how she'd fall asleep against my shoulder in the warm slant of afternoon light. The image flashes away, replaced by one of her crouched in the corner of a dark prison cell. Taryn stands behind me, whispering in my ear, trapping me. Anger stirs painfully in the pit of my stomach, and I let it fester there, gathering weight and pulling my heart down until I feel the familiar lurch in my chest. I open my eye and reach into myself. This time, I feel strings of energy pulled taut inside me, and my mind brushes past them like hands on a harp. I pull on them. My pull is unsteady, and I struggle to control the grasp. My brows furrow with the effort of hanging on to them. Before me, the rocks still stay as gray as ever, but a few feet away from them, a small ribbon of darkness creeps up from the ground. I gasp at the sight. Raffaele, I breathe. Look! The instant I say it, my concentration breaks and the strings of energy slip out of my grasp. My illusion falls back into the ground. I let out my breath as the fear pooling in my stomach trembles. Raffaele watches me quietly. I try again. My hand brushes past the strings of energy. I grab at them. Suddenly a blade flashes silver before me. I duck on instinct. Someone laughs over me, and I realize that it's the spider. He's rushed at me from the other side of the cavern. A little dark ribbon, he says with disdain. I'm terrified. Raffaele gives the enormous boy a warning stare. Don't, he says. Or what, consort? Spider sneers at me as he sheathes his dagger. Does it scare the little lamb? Raffaele arches an eyebrow. Would you like to take this up with Enzo? I would not test his temper a few weeks before the Tournament of Storms. The Tournament of Storms? What do they have planned for the biggest festival of the year? A moment of doubt flickers across Spider's face, but he hides it immediately. Tell Enzo whatever you like, he growls, then he turns his back. Irritation floods me, a release of all my pent-up fear and anxiety. Before I can think through what I'm doing, I stand up and reach out. This time I see the energy threads connecting me to Spider. I pull on them. A dark silhouette bursts from the ground before him, stopping him dead in his tracks. It's thin and transparent, hardly threatening. But it's there. The shapeless phantom bares its teeth at him and lets out a hiss. Spider whips his dagger out. I can't hang on. The illusion vanishes. I stand still, unable to believe that I just pulled it from the ground. The other elites stop to watch what's happening. Starthy frowns at me in concern. Leave her alone, she calls out to Spider, but he just ignores her. Spider turns back in my direction and smiles. In an instant, he has a blade pointed at the base of my neck. Cold metal presses against my skin. Careful you don't take too big a step, little girl, he mutters. You and your silhouettes. Soon I'll know more than just silhouettes, I murmur back. The illusion I created makes me suddenly bold and I clench my teeth, eager for violence. Wait and see. His lips curl at my challenge, but I just stare back unafraid. No, you won't. He smiles, then leans close to whisper in my ear. When that becomes obvious to everyone else, I'll enjoy watching Enzo slit your throat. His blade digs into my neck again. I fantasize about turning around his dagger, cutting him slowly from ear to ear, seeing his blood bubble from his mouth. The image flashes through my mind like lightning, leaving me swimming in a moment of terror and absolute delight. Go ahead. I want to see you try it. Maybe I should give Taryn his name when I go to the Inquisition Tower. Enough! Raffaele snaps. The sharpness in his voice startles me. I don't think anyone has ever defended me so adamantly. Spider pulls away with a laugh. I was just playing around, he says in a nonchalant voice. No harm done. I shiver. I don't think Raffaele heard what Spider whispered to me. I hope he didn't sense the image I fantasized about. At the other end of the cavern, Star Thief casts me a sympathetic glance and then rolls her eyes at Spider. Are you okay? Raffaele asks me. I manage to nod and he sighs.